people and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, it's Shift and Steer. And you know what? By this time, the big Indy 500 is over. That is, if it didn't get rained out. Because we don't know. Man. We're recording this before it, but it'll air after it. And so, you know, we could say, hey, that was a great race, but what if it got rained out, man?
Don't jinx it, man, because I'm getting on a plane tomorrow morning.
I know.
To go to the Indy 500. And you've heard us talk about it here and on Shift and Steer. We're screening Uppity, the Willie T. Ribbs story.
Yeah, it sounds a little uppity to me.
It does sound a little uppity. He was.
Where did
the
name
first,
come from?
Because back in the day, he kind of went in with sort of a confidence about him to be like, I want to drive. And he was very good. And some people called him uppity.
They were. But he had to have that confidence being the only black driver in that series.
Yeah, you know? He was the only black driver to qualify for the Indy 500.
Right.
And you really watch the documentary, you'd be like, this guy never really gets a break. And he's just kind of beat down like all the time professionally. And he just kept going at it. And you realize like he's done some pretty significant races, but because he had to just scrap to get there, I don't think Willie's ever made money. He had a paying gig at one point, but he just never really got paid.
I mean, I remember I liked him as a racer. I remember back in the 80s going to IMSA races, and he drove a Fox body. Oh, I guess it wasn't really a Fox body because it was a Mercury Capri.
Yeah, no, it's a Fox body.
Yeah. So, but he drove the motorcraft car, and I was actually a photographer, and I took pictures of him racing. And after we talked about this, I went back and looked at some of my old black and white photos.
Yeah.
And it's it was a great looking car because it was that wide body with the big square fenders.
And that's the ride that Newman got him.
Okay.
Right. And if you think back to the Newman documentary we did,
right,
when you cut to the piece with Willie T. And he goes, Newman called him and he goes, kid, you're going to get a call on Monday and you're going to get a ride. If something happens, you let me know. And it was a motorcraft team.
Yes.
And they put him in that car. So that's a part of this as well. So it's a great story. And he was very controversial, just attitude-wise, you know, would fight with people and things like that. And
will he be back there?
He's there. Yeah, he's there right now.
Damn, I literally have the motorcraft press kit from back then with his hero card in it. I should pull it out and have him sign it.
Yeah. He's there now. Nate Adams, our producer and director, runs the documentary department. He's there now setting up for the screening. We've got sort of a VIP reception for about an hour ahead of time. And then the screening is 7 o'clock at night, which unfortunately will be after you hear this, but
I hope it's not what I just envisioned in my head, because when you said Nate's there right now setting up, I thought of like when you're in grade school and the teacher has that screen, she pulls out of the tube and
it clicks.
You know, there's Nate and he's putting up folding chairs.
We tried to screen it in the infield at Indy, but during the weekend, I guess, Saturday, Sunday,
it's a party, dude.
You're not allowed to bring anything from the inside, from the outside to the infield. You're either in the infield for the weekend or stuck there. And so there was going to be like a truck, like a big panel truck or semi truck that was going to come in with a big screen and everything that sort of turned into a mobile theater.
Right, like a mobile vision or something.
But but they were going to tell them they had to be there for like 3 days. And it was like, oh, now it's going to cost tons of money. So it was kind of weird that they're not going to do that.
Drones. But, you could have had drones drop in a screen.
You know, I told Adam, I was like, hey, have you ever gone out here in L.A. to one of like
Yeah, project
the
on the side of a building or something.
Or they have an inflatable screen.
Yes, they do. Yep.
You can do that. But it's going to be at, I believe, it's called the Toby Theater. It's at the Indianapolis Museum of Art.
No, it was at.
Yeah, it was at. And it seats 500 people, and we filled it. We packed the house. I'm just going with it.
Yeah, and it was everybody came out raving.
Yeah,
they said best documentary ever
in the aisles, and there was an amazing Q&A with Adam and Nate and Willie T after.
And it was picked up by a major distributor. It's going to go
everything went
full
well.
Distribution.
It was like better than Cannes. It was fantastic.
Awesome.
So it's a good film. So what's happening is a lot of people have been asking us, hey, you're screening the film. When's it going to start streaming? When's it going to be on chassis.com? When's it going to be here, there, whatever? Here's the deal. We're working on a couple of other deals that have to do with licensing the film and things like that. So we don't have an official distribution deal for our film because other people are kind of interested in the idea. So we're working on those deals, and I know it's kind of vague.
It's not that Willie T. Ribbs hasn't agreed to be in it yet, right?
No,
okay, good. Because
That
would be a big problem,
Matt. It's Adam playing Willie T. through the whole movie.
There you go. That works.
Yeah, and then we're going to just CGI Willie in. Yeah. So it's basically just all tied up in contracts and things like that right now. That's where it is, but we have
it's not because you had Morgan Freeman play him and now there's a big problem.
No,
with that.
But Bill Cosby is in the film.
Oh, okay.
And Caitlyn Jenner is in the film because Bruce Jenner raced with Willie T.
Yeah, back when he was Bruce Jenner.
There is a kind of a weird
dynamic there.
Well,
yes,
if you watch the movie today, it's easy to understand, but I'm thinking, like, let's say Adam's kids, Sonny and Natalia, that are like 11 or 12, in 10 years from now, when they watch this documentary, I mean, they'll see it now.
Never watch it. That's something Dad did. They
but,
don't care.
Yeah. What happened is Sonny's going to be dating some girl that's into cars, and he's going to be like, oh, my dad did a movie about Willie T. Ribbs. Let's watch it. And you're going to see an interview with Bruce Jenner, right? You're going to see archival footage of Bruce Jenner.
Right.
And then you're going to cut to an interview we shot with Caitlyn Jenner.
They interviewed his twin sister.
And then you're going to be like, what?
What? And then they're going to go, oh, there's that Bill Cosby guy. Didn't he go to prison?
Yeah. Oh, that's the Jell-O guy. He's not good.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, no, that's cool. So,
but it's a great story. It's a great film. We're very proud to be able to do this for Willie T. I think he deserves it. I've been reaching out to some friends in the space, like Jimmy Vassar, and he's like, I'm booked Saturday night, but I love Willie T. I'm definitely going to come in there and just try to, like, push my dinner or whatever he's got, some event he's got that night, to come see the film and say hi to everybody. That's nice to hear. Guys like Vassar to go, hey, I'm gonna move some things so I can come out and see this and support you guys. That was pretty nice.
No, wait a minute. You have me confused. A minute ago, you were telling me it already happened, and now you're saying that he's going to try.
Yeah. So Vassar showed up. It was amazing.
Yeah.
He was great.
Except for Willie T was a little put out because everybody's paying attention to Vassar, not to him as much. And so it was kind of a big row. But when they got in the pushing match, though, that was cool.
That's right.
It was cool, yeah.
Willie T may punch somebody.
That'd be
in
awesome.
In the film.
That'd be awesome. Maybe he could relive it.
Yeah.
Matt.
He's very animated. So, anyway, great film. Hopefully you guys will be able to see it.
When do I get a viewing copy?
Yeah, we get you a copy.
Yeah, I need a copy so I can check it out.
Super top secret.
So,
we got to go screen it for Leno as well. We've got sort of this.
Don't break his speakers.
We blew up a sound system one time.
You're never going to live it down.
We're never going to live it down.
So.
And we filmed Jay Leno's garage with the Porsche 935. Third time's a charm. We did not break a car. We went out.
Did you break anything else?
No.
Okay,
everything went fine. And because there's no, like, spoilers to give away, I can tell you that we went to Willow Springs. We drove the 935. Adam and Jay had a good time with the car. And it should air, like, end of August.
Cool. That'll be good. So did Jay get to drive the car?
Jay did not drive the car. But
smart
he didn't ask to drive the car.
It's because he didn't want to break anything.
But he did ask to have a passenger seat installed so we can drive him around, which we did do.
Okay. And nobody did a wheel stand and flipped it over?
Nobody flipped it over. There were some speed limit requirements per their insurance. But
can't exceed 80 miles an hour.
It's actually 100.
No, it's 100.
Yeah,
okay.
It's 100.
So they went for the bigger policy.
That's right. I am super surprised he didn't show up in an all-denim racing suit.
That would have been great.
Come on, Sparko.
That would have been so cool.
Our guys at Sparko, Warren over at Sparko, make Leno an all-denim racing suit.
Or at least a denim look.
Right?
Denim colored or, you know, I mean, with like pearl, with like, you know, the pearl button.
Yeah, the buttons.
That'd be so cool.
Have like the little whatever, the brass rivets on the pockets.
Exactly. Then people would be like, can you be careful when you're leaning on my car?
Yeah, right. Also, they're not fire resistant.
Yeah, well, denim is totally fire resistant. You don't have to worry about that. Hey, we have a guest today,
yeah,
and we've got a lot to talk about, but we're going to get Sam Hurley on from the Shine Squad at Turtle Wax. Let's bring him up right now. So, Matt, we've got Sam Hurley here. He's part of the Shine Squad at Turtle Wax. Sam, how you doing today?
Good, you guys. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. How are you guys?
We're doing good. You know, it's Memorial Day weekend. By the time this airs, of course, Memorial Day will just be all big thoughts. And we were talking about how we probably just jinxed the Indy 500 because we said...
Don't even say it.
We hope it doesn't have moisture. And
tears and, falling from the sky.
Yeah, and yeah. It hasn't happened yet at this point. So, but, hey, so you're part of the Turtle Wax Shine Squad. We've had a number of people on the show from there. And, you know, tell us, you know, what you do and how that all kind of plays into what happens in your career and like that.
Okay, so I have been with them going on 3 years now. This is my third season with them. I was originally contacted by them and brought on, I believe, in either their second or third year, still when it was a little bit smaller. And it has grown quite a bit since then. They've brought on a lot of people from around the world. I think everyone you guys have talked to has been from America except for Jasmine from Australia.
Yes,
you got it. Yeah. They've
reached out to quite a few people. So in a few different ways, it's affected my career in all positive ways and being able to connect with fellow members that are also on the Shine Squad and open up my network per se and meet really like-minded people now all using the same products that we've been using for a while. And I guess it's just as simple as that, just bringing together a like-minded community of enthusiasts. So it's been great for that. And another thing has just been the ability to put my skills towards something specific. These products are something I was already using, so to actually be able to create content that benefits both a company that I'm proud to be working with and another route in my creativity, I guess you could say, it's just been an exciting opportunity. And they're really great about letting you be as organic as you would normally be. They're very non-invasive and in the content that you create for your lifestyle. So it's been nothing but an awesome experience.
Now, do you focus mostly on photos now or video?
With the introduction of Turtle Wax, I have done a lot of video stuff for them, like how-to videos on specific products and lines. My main thing is photos and always has been, but I have been branching into the video aspect of it. I've always kind of been around video, but a little bit timid towards it. In the past year, I have pushed a little bit more video into my work. I did SEMA coverage for them this last year. And then as well, I actually just had some work with a company called Bring a Trailer, who I hope we all know.
We're familiar with them.
Yeah, I did a road trip with them across the country to the Midi, which I know at least one of you is at.
Yes.
Matt was there. Yeah.
Yeah, I did photo and video for them on that trip as well. So,
he looked for you there, but you kept avoiding him. I don't know what the deal was.
You guys brought the orange Z car that they drove out there, right?
The yellow and green one. Yeah.
Yellow and green, yeah. We saw that there. We spoke to the guys there. Now, in addition to photography, you were a detailer before all of this, right? You were...
Well, he's still very detail-oriented.
Yeah, right? But you were detailing cars, so, right?
Exactly. So my origin is all the way back in South Dakota, up in the Midwest. It was my first job at the age of 13 before you're legally allowed to have a job was car detailing. And I did that for about 5 years on and off, just mostly in the summer seasons while I wasn't in school. So it was just always around cars. And that was still even before I had refined to my taste to which cars I actually liked. It kind of started around old muscle cars just because that was the territory I was in. I grew up around perfect muscle car restorations or cars that were completely original. Then as I moved out, made my own decisions, got different friends, it had transitioned into BMWs and stuff. But again, it had always kind of been around the car cleaning world. So that was where I started, and it's kind of stayed that way, ironically. So,
and you've been traveling throughout Europe and like that, France, Germany, places like that.
Yeah. So I guess my story in a nutshell here, this past half year, is I transitioned out of my day job to do photo and video full time freelance. It was just under 2 months ago that I quit my day job in Utah, where I live now. I was at a automotive tinting and clear bra place in Utah, Orem, Utah. And I just left that to, again, do this full free time. So I did that bring a trailer job where we drove across the United States. And then this trip that I just did through Europe was actually purely vacation. So I visited, of course, the car museums, Mercedes, Porsche, BMW, again, being a little bit biased toward the European market. And my brother actually lives over in Berlin. So we just kind of took advantage of the location and visited Paris, Berlin, obviously Munich, Stuttgart, and then a couple places in Norway as well.
Right.
That's cool. I mean, you know, it's now where did you live in South Dakota? What part?
So it was Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is the very southern, southeast corner.
Yeah, just up from Omaha, my neck of the woods.
That's right.
See?
That is your neck of the woods.
So, 3 hours away, yeah.
I've got an E46 BMW that we're going to go and photo. We're going to photograph it on Monday. And so I have detailing questions for you. Okay. First of all, nobody should wash their car at, like, if.
It's always best when you do a black car, like at noon when it's like 90 degrees.
Right.
Yeah, in the sun.
Make sure you're in direct sunlight.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to get their car washed, is there, like, they shouldn't go through any sort of machine or automated whatever. Like, just pay the extra bucks and get the hand wash done, right? Or...
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so
I mean, it's hard to tell the general public not to do that. I mean, especially if it's a white car, you can almost get away with it, but it's going to show on your paint, you know, after the first or second time you do it, regardless. Especially if it's a black car, I wouldn't touch those. There's certain methods that even in a hand wash, if you're doing it yourself, that I always recommend. For one, always use two buckets. You have a rinse bucket to essentially rinse your mitt off in, and then your soap bucket that you go back into. So it just takes a little bit of that dirt that you're pulling off the car out of the glove before you go back into your clean soap bucket. That's one really good thing. Starting from the top of the car to the bottom, because typically you have more dirt at the bottom of the car and obviously the wheels as well. And then as well with drying it, one of my favorite things to do, obviously you want to try to stay out of direct sunlight so your car doesn't dry too fast. And that obviously depends on what climate you're in as well. When I was back in the Midwest, it's very humid there. So cars did not dry very fast, which is great for car washing because it dried when you wanted it to dry. Whereas in Utah and some warmer places, Utah is a very desert-esque climate. So things dry really fast. So you have to work a little bit faster. Otherwise, just kind of re-rinse it as you go. But again, one of my favorite things to do as far as drying a car goes is actually use compressed air, or I use a leaf blower, just because it gets a lot of the water out of all the nooks and crannies or cracks underneath trim that suddenly water pours out of as soon as you start drying the car. So you kind of get rid of that water from all those hard-to-reach places, and then go in with your spray detail or your spray wax and then clean up any little marks that you have. So it kind of gets rid of that extra step of smearing around some sort of medium to dry the car. You just kind of blow air and get the majority of it out, and then you're introducing a product that's already there to protect and will safely wipe up any excess that you have.
And then what do you do, anything special for black cars, dark blue cars?
So I guess if we're specifically talking about black cars, there is a product line that Turtle Wax has that's meant for black cars that kind of has a sort of shade in it. They have a Carinuba wax within that. And as a lot of people know, Carinuba is great for hiding a lot of little micro scratches if your paint has not recently been corrected. So it helps a lot. Regardless, Carinuba wax helps a lot with micro scratches, but Turtle Wax does have a line for black cars specifically that helps kind of richen or make the paint look a little bit more rich specifically for those black paints. But as far as black cars go, it's just, you just have to essentially be that much more careful about contaminants, keeping everything clean, and taking those extra steps in a careful manner to make sure it stays nice. So,
you mentioned correction. You mentioned paint correction. And out here, all the high-end cars and shops that you go to, everybody's throwing that around now, paint correction.
It's just a nice way of saying clay bar the thing before you
right.
give it a good base.
Yeah,
you know?
All right. So, yeah, go through that process. What is paint correction, and why does it cost hundreds of dollars, or are we paying too much?
Paint correction will come in many stages. Clay bar is one really good option to be able to remove the contaminants that have been stuck down deep in the pores of your paint. There's many different ways to start with this first process, like paint or like clay bar, but that is probably the most widely known one. Again, just removing all the contaminants after you wash the car, you do this clay bar process where it removes all these contaminants just so it strips away everything from the paint so that you can work with the paint or the clear coat directly. From there, the actual paint correction process that's kind of coined is the actual paint correction process is a few different stages of things. You have your cutting process where you're going to use a little bit heavier of a compound to kind of flatten out any grooves or imperfections in the levels of the clear coat or the paint that you're working with.
Okay.
So it's going to take away all your biggest scratches or imperfections. And then from there, you have a middle stage. It's more of a smaller or I'm mixing all my words up here. A polish that has a little bit less grit in it, per se. It's just kind of like one mixing everything up here.
Well, yeah, I know what you're saying. You're saying we're stepping down.
Yeah.
We're starting with
exactly,
one.
Exactly.
Right. Just a very, very fine, like, cutting agent into the compound.
So one's taking away the bigger scratches and imperfections, and as you go, it's getting smaller and smaller and more precise and smoother. So
And along that line, Sam, I think what you're describing, too, what a lot of people, it's so, you know, in our faces, but a lot of people don't realize that polishing is actually scratching. It's just taking it, as Sam's saying, to the finest level where to the eye it looks like a mirror. But if you actually took a magnifying glass or something, you'd see that it still has scratches even at the best.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That first stage is taking away the majority of the scratches and imperfections. And a lot of people, to each their own, a lot of people find that is just enough. But if you are looking closer, you still will see a lot of minute scratches because again, you're getting rid of the majority of it, but it is something that is abrasive, and it's just smoothing it out just enough, and that's why you need those couple extra stages to actually get it to a literal mirror finish.
It's a day spa for your car's paint, Matt.
Yeah,
that's what
it is. But how many times can you correct your paint before
Once the clear's gone, you're screwed.
Now you got to start clearing it again or starting over and painting it again. It's an interesting process. We've seen it especially on black cars. Like over at the at Adam Kroll's garage, we have a 1965 Lamborghini 350 GT. Brad, you've seen it over there.
Yeah.
And that car is almost entirely original, and a lot of the paint on that car is original. There was some touch-up done, and we had a professional crew come over and detail it. They actually detailed it for a TV show and stuff, and one of the things that they two things they pointed out. One is if you put your finger, like, in a little plastic bag, like a Ziploc bag, and then run your finger with the bag over the paint, you can feel the imperfections in the grit way more than just feeling it with your finger alone. And now, you don't want to do that after it's paint corrected because that bag can start to scratch.
Right, but I walk through parking lots and car shows doing that just to check them out.
But you can actually really feel by having that extra layer in between your finger and the plastic, almost like a rubber glove.
Yeah.
You can really kind of feel it.
Yeah.
And one of the things he pointed out was, he said, you know, they did it because it had swirl marks and you know.
But that car is a lacquer paint job.
Okay, so here's the thing is, he was saying how on the touched up pieces, there was no real oxidation because now it's a two stage with some clear coat.
Yes.
So when he's detailing it, there's no real black coming off in those sections. And in the sections that were the original paint, there's black coming off. And that's how he was able to identify
where it was touched up.
Where it was touched up and what was original. So we know how much of the paint, for the most part, was originally done. And then they did such a great job in this paint correction process of getting everything to blend and match perfectly and polish up, and then a good coat of wax, and the car looks fantastic. But that was an interesting process. It was especially that older paint didn't have this added layer that we have now.
And you just said it, because how many times can you, you know, buff and correct before you're through that? Well,
yeah,
I can remember years and years ago with, you know, show cars that had lacquer paint and
that. Yeah, you could burn right through that
you
paint.
You could burn right through it. And
with the machine, and that's
you know,
it.
You
done.
Hit it with an edge or something, you boom through it, yeah. And you'd go, oh, man. Then you'd have to spot it back in and start over. But the thing about black cars, I mean, because I've owned a number of black cars, and if you get that base that Sam's talking about, you get that glass base, as long as you, as he said, don't start wiping it down with dirty towels, and you don't get anybody leaning against it or rubbing against it. If you keep it waxed and clean, that's probably the best thing that you can do for the car.
So here's the question, though. Okay, we talk about black cars, any dark color, anything, maybe now we have these shiny colors but without a metallic. Think of like the putty Porsches and stuff like
that. Well, or the flat paints.
Right, or the flat paints.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question is you get your black car looking great, how do you maintain that? Do you still use a spray detailer, or now you don't touch it with a rag? Right?
So, I mean, yeah, so like he was just saying there, it's best to obviously keep it protective, which I'll quick get into, just because then the smaller amount of times that you have to then go back and correct your paint, the better, obviously, so you're not wearing through it too much. A lot of it, if you're not too invasive with it, you're more so just kind of moving the clear coat around and not digging in too deep. So as long as it's not too heavy a correction that you have to do every single time, it shouldn't be anything you have to worry about too soon. But as far as just keeping it protective, numerous products that are a little bit like harder of a shell. So again, in Turtle Wax's specific line, they have one called a hard shell, and it's a wax that's supposed to be able to stay on your paint for up to a year. Obviously, depending on sun exposure, how many washes, etc. But it's more of a harder coat that will protect your paint through the year. So it's kind of a base coat, and then on top of that, after that's dried and cured and on your paint, you can use waxes like Karen Eagle wax that, again, fill in any small imperfections that could still be left over or that introduce themselves later. But that itself is just a good kind of sacrificial or layer that can be on top of your car after every single wash that you refresh each time. You can do it whether it's a paste Karen Eagle wax or they have a Karen Eagle wax spray line.
Yeah.
Again, it's just another layer that adds on a little bit more protection that you can redo every single time after your wash. So like I was saying, after my wash where I blow out all the water from the cracks and what have you, I go back and I finish all the little minute details or marks that are still left over from water drips that I just blew out with, say, their ice spray wax or their Carenuga wax. And from there, it's just kind of that final step of a little bit of protection and added shine each time that stays on my paint that allows me to keep the hard work that I did in my correction maintained.
Yeah. It's another question for you guys. So somebody reached out to me, a friend reached out to me recently and said, hey, I just bought a new car. Actually, Bentley Bentayga. Somebody just bought, a friend of mine bought a Bentley Bentayga SUV.
An actor friend, I bet.
yes, an actor friend bought a Bentley Bentayga SUV, black on black. I was like, all right, I get you, buddy. You're going for the Jay-Z car collection.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So their question was, hey, man, I'm starting to see all of these ads and Instagram and all the stuff of this ceramic coatings and things that you put on the paint. And he's like, what do you think of these? And I had a couple of thoughts on it. And don't let my thoughts skew your thoughts. Thought one is, it's all bullshit. Thought two is, we see this. Brad and I probably see this. You might see it in Utah. But every freaking car dealer in Arizona tries to add something to the car, like some sort of paint protection. And some company comes in for $60, they spray something on the paint, they put it in the showroom, they charge you $499, and they say it's paint protection of some sort. You don't have to wax your car for 3 years or whatever. I think that's the most ridiculous proposition
in the world.
Matt,
you've never lived in the Midwest. If you go to buy a car there, they flip the car over, and they say, you need rust protection.
Rust protection.
They spray a little rubber goo on the wheel housings, charge you $600.
Right?
You know?
Then you say, what are you talking about? It's a McLaren. It's got a carbon fiber tub with all aluminum pieces.
It doesn't matter. Something's going to rust out. You need this.
So there's these.
Don't underestimate the Midwest.
I guess sort of these gimmicky products. And so my answer to my friend was, look, have you ever gone to a Pebble Beach or a San Marino Motor Classic, any of the Concours, and all the cars there are coated with this lifetime ceramic coating? I was like, probably none are there with that coating.
I hate to contradict you, but you didn't see the little pop-up tent behind the golf course last year?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they had it
in the water.
And all of the Bentleys and the Rolls Royce were lined up getting it done.
Just spraying it on there?
They just drive through. They have a sprinkler set up, and it just sprays it on there.
All right.
Well,
so
what do you think?
That being said, Sam's going to be like, yeah, that's my business. I put this stuff on
exactly.
All the
time. He's going to go, God, that's what I do for dealerships, you jerks.
Any thoughts on
that? On that specific note, there's so many different levels to long coats that you could get into. I have done a lot of work for dealerships, not directly at them. I've only worked at one dealership specifically, and it wasn't in that department, ironically. In my time spent in the tint and clear bra shop called Untouchables in Utah for 3 years, we did a lot of work for dealerships that would coat them before we put our clear bra or our paint protection film on the front ends of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that they would do specifically at car dealerships, I don't believe in. I don't know if I should get into specific product names here, which I won't.
No, we don't want to be sued.
Exactly. A lot of the specific stuff from dealerships people really should look into, whether it's on car forums, what have you. A lot of that stuff I do not believe in. Whereas there are specific car detailing shops that have a much heavier process. Like there is one in Utah that we are really good friends with, named Lux Auto Spa. And they do have various lines of ceramic coatings that are supposed to last a little bit longer. And shops like that, I am going to believe, because they specialize in paint correction. They specialize in all these different aspects of the car world, where I'm gonna trust these specialists a lot more than I trust someone at a Toyota dealership that wants to get a spiff for adding on something to your car deal. So,
but again, Bob got me good financing. He's not going to take advantage of me on the ceramic coating, man.
I can't tell you how many times we've.
How did I not trust Bob at Toyota? So, again, it takes a lot more research on each person's side to figure out exactly what you're getting into. One thing that I did learn in my time at the BMW dealership I worked at, when I was in the sales department, and by the way, I did terrible at sales because I'm a car salesman. The one thing I learned was that now that so many car brands are so on par with making good enough cars, BMW, specifically back in like the 80s and 90s, they were, you could say, one of the best cars being made as far as sportiness goes. So they could sell it off of that. Whereas nowadays, there's so many great competitors that we can't say BMW is the best. We're not allowed to say that as salesmen. What we have to say is they're not better, they're different. So there's a lot of options out there that's
what you say about retarded kids.
You can't say that.
I can't say that either.
You can't say that either.
Look.
Along that lines, you brought something up. Let me ask you this. Okay. We both know a lot of people that have exotic cars, expensive cars, and they get them wrapped. The minute they get them wrapped in the clear bras. And you just said you worked around that.
Yeah, a full wrap, correct. Vinyl, anything, graphics.
Well, like my business partner, he just got the Mercedes 2+2 GT, and it's got a matte paint job, and he had it wrapped. So what is the proper maintenance, and does Turtle Wax make anything, you know, you get bird droppings on that wrap or something like that? What's the best way to maintain that?
I agree with Brad. There's several questions regarding wrap and clear bras.
And how long will it last? When will it start to yellow? Peel off. Just go right on down the list.
So let's start with how do you maintain a wrap and how do you maintain a clear bra?
Yeah. And does Turtle Wax make anything to utilize on those products?
Okay. So you asked the right guy. So I was in this for 3 years, so I've had to explain this to many a customer. So first, the difference between clear bra and wraps. Not at all the same. The installation process is somewhat similar. but actual vinyl wrapping is much more forgiving and a lot easier to install. The one difference that makes wraps a little bit harder to install is that typically if it's a color change, which is why most people are doing it, is that you have to deal, there's a lot more detail oriented in the edges per se and like tucking in behind door handles.
Yeah, you got to take lights out. You
got to take the car apart.
Yeah, you got to take the whole car apart.
Yeah, exactly. So in clear bra, it can be similar in that aspect. It can also be very hard, but a lot of times shops don't need to necessarily tuck in behind door handles, like assembling a car. If you want like the most amazing paint protection film job, then a lot of shops will do that, where they'll assemble it so you don't even see the edge of the clear bra, so it's literally invisible. So you have, you know, lots of shops in the whole spectrum of how detailed they get in that. But it is a common misconception that wraps are protecting your paint as well as the clear bras are, which is not true. As far as thickness goes, wrap is about 1, maybe 2 mils thick, whereas clear bra is anywhere from 7 to 9 mils thick. So it can take a much bigger impact from rocks, bugs, what have you. As far as maintenance goes on each of these, they are surprisingly similar to paint. So you can use waxes on them. The ceramic coatings that people have heard of, you can do that as well. It's again, surprisingly similar to paint. You need to maintain it just as well. You need to clean it often. You need to keep your wax or whatever protectant on you, because it is just another surface that can absorb contaminants, especially bird droppings that are going to stain it, that you need to pay good attention, just like clear coat, to keeping clean and keeping some sort of protective layer on it to maintain it. So as far as lifespan goes, both are, again, pretty similar. Depending on sun exposure, how well you keep it clean, and whatever, you know, it runs into, typically wraps and clear bras are going to last somewhere around 5 or so years. There are some companies now, at least in the paint protection or clear bra community, that are offering warranties up to 10 years, and they can last that long. It again, just depends on the sun exposure, that UV damage that'll come in. And they have made a lot of good advancements in that community in the past 5 to 10 years, to where they aren't turning yellow quite as fast. They aren't, I don't know if you guys ever remember any cars that have like the original film that turned into like black and like this cracky weird.
Yeah.
Like
they're usually on delivery trucks and like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can still see some cars that have that. It's just like this cracked up black weird thing on the front of cars that was left on there. So we always have to tell people, or did have to tell, I don't work there anymore. Did have to tell people that in about 5 to 10 years, depending on how well you take care of it or if this car is garaged, you will need to take this off. And a lot of people question why they would even do it if you have to take it off eventually, but it's so you don't have to repaint your car, you know, so hopefully you don't get in an accident.
So you
have even had people that have had fender benders, bumpers, what have you, that have scraped something pretty well, and it looks like it's messed up the paint, and you peel it off, and it's perfect. And suddenly you just need some new clear bra. So
similar to paint, you want some sort of wax or spray detail or product that you use on it that has some UV protection, because just like, you know, parking your car out in the parking lot every day, that clear coat on your roof is going to go like every car in Arizona.
Yeah, well, you know, so UV rays damage everything.
Same thing. So here's a couple more questions in that topic. I think Brad has questions too. But one is, how do you prep your paint before it gets clear bra or wrapped? And two, how long do you wait for a new painted piece before you can put a wrap or a clear bra on it? Let's say, like, okay, I just redid the whole front bumper cover on the BMW. It's fresh paint. Does it need to be in the sun for a month? Do I need to drive it for a month?
Put it on while it's wet, it'll stick better.
You know? At what point, exactly, when you take the clear bra off, is it going to take the paint with it? Right? So that's it. How do you
prep
the paint?
Curing should
be? How much curing on a new paint job? And how long, you know, what should you do to prep the paint? By the way, if you go get a brand new car, like if you order a car and you know it's not been on the lot for 2 months, you know, you go get your brand new Porsche and it orders, you get the thing, it's like it was built on this date and then it was put on a boat and it was shipped here, and you're like, all right, well, that's about 8 weeks, and most of it was in a boat somewhere. It's not really curing really that much with sun or anything. Like, can you wrap a brand new car?
You can.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are really good questions. So I'll start with how long after painting or even a brand new car. So the good thing about most brand new cars is the job that they do at the factory as far as painting goes is fantastic as far as adhesion. That's the one main thing that we found in most aftermarket paint jobs after collision repair is that the prep work and, say, adhesion promoter that they use when they're painting the car is typically is what you'll find most faulty, again, with aftermarket paint jobs.
So I should have got my bumper painted in Glendale because it was really cheap.
It was that spray can that you were out there in the parking lot with.
Should have done it myself.
Exactly. That probably won't work that well. So as far as cure time goes, whether, I mean, if it's a trusted shop or something that, you know, we'll just assume that it was a good job, typically you want to wait about a month. Sun exposure does help it cure. Some shops will, quote unquote, bake the paint or cure it with heat lamps, which does speed up the process quite a bit. But typically, we always like to say you should wait at least a month after an aftermarket paint job, or, you know, some people don't like the idea or the name of aftermarket. If it's a reputable shop, I always say wait a month. If you do drive it at all after that point, you're most likely going to get one or two small little chips. And by chips, I even mean the tiny, tiny, minute ones that you can only see up close. Because as soon as you get that little imperfection that has taken the flatness or the perfect glass smoothness out of your paint, it is possible that that can hold a tiny bit of air underneath the clear bra, underneath the film. And again, it's not something you're going to notice unless your nose is right on the car. But it is there, so we always had to warn people about that. If you drive your car at all, expect to have a couple little minute ones, which was another thing, too, is when people would come in with a car that had, like, 40,000 miles, and they said, there's no huge rock chips on it. I don't see anything broken through the paint. You get your nose on the car, there's a million little tiny ones that can still hold a little bit of air under it, so it's not going to look quite as perfect.
Yeah.
So as far as brand-new cars go, again, typically they are going to be the best paint jobs as far as adhesion goes. So you should be fine to clear bra them as soon as you get the car. That's who we would always trust the most is actual factory paint jobs. And then on to the prep of paint or the application of clear bra. Even a brand-new car, you know, in transportation on a boat overseas, on the truck from the port to wherever you live, you need to make sure you clean it and prep it correctly. Ironically, one of the higher end companies that we did locally in Utah, they were most commonly the one that had the most rail dust in their paint. So those little tiny orange bits. This specific brand, which I won't mention, commonly had either white or black cars. And on the white cars, you would notice it the most. Those little, do you guys know what I'm talking about? Those little orange dots that you'll see, the rail dust, are like, they look like little rust spots. They're just orange that you get away with. You can use acids or you can use clay bar, what have you. So even on brand new cars, there is commonly lots of imperfections or contaminants, I should say, in the paint. So as far as prep goes for getting everything ready, whether, again, aftermarket, waited a month, or a brand new car, you kind of have to go through that same process almost as if you're about to do paint correction. So you want to clear all the contaminants out of the paint. You want to make sure it's as smooth of a surface as possible. So if it's a car that's a couple months old, not too many miles, paint's still in good condition, but it's had a few washes and it has swirls in it, it is definitely better to have it polished up a little bit because, again, then you have a smoother surface. You don't have to do quite as much because it is really honestly forgiving. When you put the film over the paint, you're not going to see quite as much. A good friend of ours back in Utah had his car repainted, stored it in his garage, so he wasn't driving it for that month of curing, and his cat walked on the hood of his black Mercedes SL, and you could see cat footprints across the hood even when he cleaned it because the cat's feet were dirty. Who knows? But so there were perfect little kitty prints throughout the entire hood. when we applied the clear bra, we didn't worry about finishing it because we knew this shouldn't be an issue. When we applied the clear bra, you couldn't see it at all because it was such tiny scratches that it wasn't a big issue. So whoever owns that car now, when they take the clear bra off in like 10 years, they'll have perfect paint except for a couple little kitty prints. Again, it's a really similar process and just making sure you have clean paint because, again, that clear bra can either hold air underneath it or will show any imperfections that are just slightly too much. So,
and so
does that answer the question?
So let's say you clay bar it and you get it polished up pretty nicely. Now, are you do you have that layer of wax on there? So, or do you have to strip the wax off at this point? How do you before you lay down vinyl or clear bra? Yeah.
So as far as the adhesion goes of the paint protection film, it is better to not have waxes on there. But at the same time, it's not detrimental. It still will adhere totally fine, unless it's like you're literally spraying the wax on the car as you're trying to apply it just to test it. Like, that won't work. But, I mean, if there's still a little bit of wax, say, from polishing, or if you happen to use a detail or something, it should still work. But, again, you're going to get the best adhesion from your film, your paint protection film, if there aren't contaminants, or I shouldn't say contaminants, waxes on the paint. So, for instance, say you have, like, on a fender, if you're wrapping the edge of that paint protection film into the fender so that you don't see that line on the outside of the fender, you won't want wax on the inside of that fender, that fender lip, because you want it to adhere as best as possible, which it will do if it's just paint on clear bra.
Right.
Clear bra
well,
on paint.
I think what Matt's trying to get at is on his BMW, which is black, last weekend he started waxing it, and instead of doing panel by panel, he actually put wax over the whole entire car, and it was out in the sun. He got a call from a girl. He went inside, started talking to her. He forgot about it. Came back out. It was kind of baked on. He's wondering, can he wrap over that, or should he do something to it first?
Could you imagine?
Have you ever seen anybody's car like that?
I've seen it.
You just go, what
driving down the
hell?
Street with the wax. Like,
where they went, I just didn't have time to get it off. I'll do it next week.
We've seen certain cases where there are, you know, funky blotches of contaminants and what have you. And again, it's really a case-to-case basis on how indifferent of a stain or what have you it is. So what you can do is if they have the opportunity maybe to take a scrap and like a little small square, you can test it on your hood and then see what it looks like with the clear bra applied and then peel it off. And if it's okay, then go from there. But to be sure, your best idea would be to polish it and try to get that out of there just to make sure.
Sure.
Because, you know, it may be a case where it looks okay enough, but then as soon as you get the whole clear bra done and you take it out in the direct sunlight, that's like the true test of light, is to see, you know, direct sunlight. That's when you're going to see all your stuff. So, again, probably best to polish it and then avoid any surprises.
Is there any risk with a clear bra of if you leave it on the car, there's a lot of heat, a lot of moisture, of when you peeling it off, that your original paint is going to be cloudy at all?
As far as I've seen, no.
It's one of the things I've always wondered.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as when you apply it, the moisture and whatnot underneath it, the installer, as long as he's doing a good enough job, when he squeegees it out, he's getting the majority of the moisture out. What we would often find at the end of our jobs that we have to kind of keep an eye on when we finish, we leave the car, let it sit for a little while, maybe put it in the sun to dry and adhere as best as possible, is you would find these little pockets of water, which you can actually take a hypodermic needle and stick it into the bra.
He said hypodermic needle, and we had
out.
To... He's gone.
He's gone.
The
lost.
Government cut him off. So, I don't know. He's still there, so... can you hear us?
We can.
There
you are.
You said hypodermic needle, and they cut you off. The phone company just cut it off. So, and you can actually take that and suck it out.
Yeah, exactly. So, obviously, in the angles, you're not poking the paint, but you suck that moisture out of there so that, again, because the water pocket, if it's too concentrated, it would stand in there. But the small majority of any moisture that was still originally left under there just kind of goes away. Right? It's not an issue. It evaporates. Especially in heat, and it's not an issue. So the small pockets of water, you get out of there. A lot of people would worry in theory about the little hole that you poke into the clear bra, but two different things within the clear bra solve that problem. The adhesive itself is so thick on those that it kind of peels itself back up, as well as the layer on the outside. A lot of clear bras nowadays actually peel themselves in heat. I don't know if you guys have ever seen anybody kind of expo that or show you that, whereas you can kind of scratch the surface of clear bra And as soon as you subject it to either sunlight or a heat gun, it actually heals up.
Yeah.
Perfectly glass again.
I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I saw that at SEMA.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, sort of a self-healing thing.
SEMA would be a great place to find somebody to show you that, whether it's like Expel or SunTech, or most companies have that now. I don't think there's any. There might be one left that doesn't have that healing process in their product, but super, super common now. So as far as the little micro scratches and whatnot go, Clearbra is a little bit more forgiving than paint. As far as I know, there is kind of a lifetime to the healing process. Eventually, it won't work quite as well if you beat it up a little bit too much. But for those general minute scratches, it's quite a bit more forgiving. So.
It's just like human skin. The older it gets, the slower it gets rehealing.
That's right.
Exactly.
So,
good analogy, yeah.
So what we've learned today with Sam here is that if you really want the best place to wash your car, you should jump in it now. Drive to the Midwest because it's always better to wash back there.
Exactly.
That your front bumper cover on your BMW, yeah. Matt, you're screwed. You've driven a couple hundred miles, so you're going to have rock chips and pits all over.
Actually, I haven't put it on yet. I'm doing it today after
higher
the show.
Than that.
But, okay,
that.
You won't be able to drive anymore.
Yeah.
And that Turtle Wax makes products to keep the car clean,
yes.
Get it clean, and to make it super shiny. And that
maintain that clean.
Yes, okay. and that the clear bras, they actually do work. They're worth the money, and if you can afford them, wrap every car you have the minute you get it.
Get it, right? Okay. I know we're running out of time, but on the topic of car detailing, I have one last question, and it's for both of you, because Brad owns a wheel company.
My hair's not curly.
How tough is powder coating on wheels? Should you use anything other than just soap and water? And can you use a brush, or does it scratch them up? Like, how do you clean and maintain wheels? Brad, you go first.
Well, what I tell all my customers on powder-coated wheels...
is when they get dirty, come buy a new set?
Is exactly. That they're trash, get a new one. No, is you should not use a brush. Because even like a horsehair brush is going to... You wouldn't use it on the... I mean... You know, I've used a horsehair brush on some cars and like that, but you know, you want to use microfiber. A clean microfiber cloth, soap and water. But what I tell every customer is I say, get a bottle of the spray detailer, like the Turtle Wax spray detailer. Because what you want to do is the minute you take them out of the box, dust them off.
Yeah.
Douse them with that stuff, because when they put on the tire slop to mount the tires, some of that stuff, we don't even know what they use. And I've seen it etch wheels before. So I tell them, put a nice heavy coat of liquid wax on them. And then every single time that you wipe your car down, wipe your wheels down every
just
time.
Just like the spray dealer. Treat the wheel like you would paint at this point.
Yes, because it is a painted surface. And the more wax that you build up, the less brake dust is going to want to stick to it. The less dirt's going to want to stick in the crevices. And the easier it's going to be to maintain and keep water spots off of.
Yeah.
Sam, go.
Yeah. Do you agree?
All right. So, yes, I'm in the same boat there. So that kind of that process that I was explaining when I first came on, of washing your car top to bottom, I do actually use a microfiber mitt to clean my wheels, and I do the same thing where I use a rinse bucket and a wash bucket, and I do it on each specific wheel until it's clean, so that you focus on one wheel, you do that, rinse, wash back and forth on different parts of it, and then go to the next one. If I happen to be using the same mitt, where usually I'll try to get their own specific microfiber towel, so it's not the same mitt I end up using later on a different car's paint, you try to use, its own specific one to clean it. But again, sticking with microfiber stuff and actually washing it as if it was paint. And then, like you were saying there, when you first get wheels, or if you have them perfectly clean and decontaminated, it is best to have some sort of wax on there. So you can use, like I was saying, the hard shell paste wax is a great one, because it is something that's meant to last a little bit longer than your everyday spray wax. But regardless, like, any sort of wax product or protective product on there is going to be much better than ignoring them, essentially, which a lot of people do. It's in the small details and those little things like wheels and the micro scratches that you can get in them, or the stains. I notice that stuff at shows, and it can ruin a car.
Yeah.
So.
Well, especially nowadays, I mean, the amount of powder-coated wheels has, just tripled what we sell, I know, at ours. And people... It's funny. People do not understand how to treat their wheels. And unfortunately, wheels take a beating compared to the rest, because if you pull through a puddle going in and out of a gas station, you don't know if there's antifreeze in there or what that's splashing up on.
All right, between chemicals and rocks and dirt and everything else.
Yeah, you know,
and
it's
all the brake dust.
It pees.
Yes. Yeah, dogs peeing on your car. What the hell, you know?
I live in Venice. It's people.
That's true. That's true.
All right. Listen, we appreciate you calling in, Sam, and we're going to let you go. We're going to do a little housekeeping and stuff on our end. I'm going to tell you guys about Brush Hero. This is kind of on the topic of detailing.
We just talked about that. Hey, Sam, thank you very much. We appreciate you calling in today.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Now, where can they follow you on Instagram?
So every social media outlet is just my first name, last name, Sam Hurley, and there is no E in Hurley. It's just H-U-R-L-Y. So I guess that makes me unique. But Sam Hurley on Instagram is probably my main outlet. I do also have Twitter, Sam Hurley Photography on Facebook. But again, as long as you just search my name, Sam Hurley, but without an E in Hurley, you should be able to find me. So, and thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been a good talk.
Thanks for bringing some expertise, and we'll check out your photography. Thank you very much.
Okay. And thanks, are you guys going to be at like Monterey Car Week and whatnot? I have to find you guys eventually, and we got to meet in person.
Definitely. And
the first phone interview.
Yeah, yes. And follow us on Instagram. That way, we can kind of keep track of each other. I followed you today, and we'll hit you up.
Okay, I'll be at Car Week and I'll be at SEMA, so I'm sure we can find you.
Oh, we'll be at both. Okay, cool.
Thanks, Sam.
Okay. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, talk to you later.
All right.
Yeah. So you were talking about
Brush Hero. It's our favorite water-powered cleaning machines for fast, fun, expert-level car and bike detailing. It works great on rims and wheel spokes and grills and maybe in the engine bay. Get down in there in the nooks and crannies of your engine bay. This saves time, saves backache, saves you from wet, scraped up knuckles. There's no batteries or electricity required. Brush Hero is completely water powered. What's great is you can get it with different attachments and different brush heads. The starter set comes with two brush heads, a soft one for sensitive surfaces such as paint and chrome, and a tough one for serious mud, muck, and brake dust. Beyond cars and trucks, Brush Hero can be used on your barbecues, sporting equipment, patio furniture, pretty much anything. Yes, Brad.
I'm going to tell you, I used the Brush Hero that they sent me.
Did you?
But I didn't use it on my car yet.
Used it on George the dog?
No, you know what I used it on? My pool.
Oh, really?
I found a great use for it. The pool tile. You know, here it is. We're coming into summer. And so I was detailing out my pool. And over the winter, you get a little bit of muck buildup on the tile around the outside. Mm-hmm. And there's this chemical I buy at the pool store. Normally, I take a brush and I get, you know, into the pool and actually do it. Well, it's still a little chilly because we haven't had a lot of warm weather yet this year.
Yeah.
And I went, hey, I got that Brush Hero. Hooked it up to the hose.
Yeah.
And it worked awesome.
It worked great, right?
Oh, it was great.
Nice. This is, check it out. It's the ultimate detailing tool. For right now, you can go to brushhero.com. Use the code SHIFT, SHIFT. Don't forget the F.
Yeah, make sure that, yeah.
Make sure you got the F in there. And for 10% off your entire order. And any orders over $40 will ship. Free. We'll shift free.
We'll shift free.
We'll ship for free. So go to brushhero.com, use code SHIFT for 10% off.
Okay, we had our guest on longer than we thought, so we're running out of time.
I was getting into the details.
I know.
Detailing.
No, it was cool. So let's talk really quick with Indy 500 time of year. I want to just hit on this really quick. The Andy Granatelli cars. The STP cars. STP used to be huge at the Indy 500. And I remember...
We love the Granatelli stuff because Adam always thinks of his commercials where he's wearing the trench coat. He looks like Fat Inspector Gadget.
He does. That's exactly right. And he used to come out there and yell, yeah. I'm Andy Granatelli!
Yeah, and those commercials were great. We had J.R. Granatelli in the studio with us a while back. And we watched the he's like, I love this. They're great. So we had a great time.
Years ago, I went out to their place out... which is way out, you know, on the edge of town.
And
JR showed me around in that sport coat. It's there at their
oh,
place.
Oh, really?
With all the STPs. And, and every time I see the guys at Moon Eyes wearing the Moon Eyes sport coats with the Moon Eyes, like, it's the same thing. But with Moon Eyes, I think, oh, yeah, STP must influence them.
Right.
But they had those cars. Now, I had a – I remember I had a – not a Hot Wheels, but a Johnny Lightning car of the turbine car, the little wedge. And I loved that thing just because of the way it looked. And then as I grew up, I learned more about what it was. It was back in 67 that the STP turbo car came so close to winning. I mean, this car, it was in the lead. It led most of the race. And the damn thing lost on lap 197. And do you remember why
it lost?
That's
right. Yeah. There was some cheap part, like a bearing or something.
It was just a little bearing. They later said it was a $6 bearing.
Yeah.
Which in 1967, let's extrapolate that out, that's a $1,000 bearing today. but a $6 bearing, and it took the win away from Parnelli Jones. And they were trying to prove that these turbine cars could really, you know, really work well. And if you've ever seen that car, you know what? I think it's in the Indy Museum. So when you're there, you need to look at it because the driver's here and the motor's right alongside of him.
Yeah.
And there was another turbine car where it was in the back and it had a giant, like, exhaust coming up out of it. But they were just Pratt & Whitney motors that would have normally been in, like, a King Air aircraft or something like that.
Right.
You know, a turboprop. And
I saw one of them up at there was like a track day at Laguna Seca, and somebody brought one out. Maybe it was like one of Canepa's clients or something like that. And, you know, it was making all kinds of crazy noise and blowing steam and all kinds of stuff. And it was cold out, and it was impressive. It was impressive. It
well, it's
cool.
It's like we've been up to Jay Leno's place, and he has
his jet bike.
Well, no, and he's got that turbine-powered Chrysler. Yeah. Where, you know, at one time they thought turbine-powered, because they were using them in helicopters and planes, and they thought they could scale it down. Well, it just didn't work as well.
Yeah. He's also got that GM, like, prototype supercar that's turbine-powered.
Yeah, oh, that's right. I forgot about it. Wasn't that built by Cadillac?
I don't know.
It's like a wedge. It's I know what one
but
you
But now
mean.
He has a turbine-powered room of cars and
the
bikes.
Whole room's turbine powered.
Yeah, well, everything in there is. He has another section of stuff.
Well, these cars, you know, we think to today's standards, here's an Indy car, and everybody was wowed over it, and it was putting out 500 horsepower, Matt.
Yeah.
Now, one of Goldberg's street driven
demon puts out 900 now with the exhaust and stuff on it.
So I mean, it's like 500. I mean, he could have waxed their asses in that thing. You know?
Oh my gosh!
But in 1968, they came back for another crack at it, and again they lost. Lap 181, they got beat. Unser took the checkered flag that year. The cars were, you know, tried. I mean, they tried them. You know, in all kinds of racing. It never worked. And then USAC later banned turbine cars and all-wheel drive cars, which I thought was a little strange. Hmm. They banned those too. And, you know, but it was a cool time. They were trying to experiment, and instead Indy shut them down, so we don't want experimentation. We just want Indy.
Yeah, enough of that.
Enough of that. Don't be going out of the box, man. Hey, but if you want to go out of the box, we're going to tell you about Turtle Wax. The automotive world has seen major advances since Turtle Wax invented the world's first liquid car polish back in 1941. But as the saying goes, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And things that threaten the look, feel, and smell of your car are as consistent as ever. That's why Turtle Wax has spent 77 years developing the most revolutionary products in car care, like their Power Outline, featuring advanced technology that destroys stains and odors at the molecular level. Turtle Wax Power Out products are designed to clean, shine, and protect your interior from whatever messes the world throws at it. Their dedication to innovation is so great, Turtle Wax is getting recognition in unprecedented categories. Over 40,000 consumers voted Power Out Carpet and Mats Cleaner the 2018 Product of the Year in the Pet Care category. While awards look nice on mom's mantle, what matters most to Turtle Wax is how much car enthusiasts worldwide trust their products. Turtle Wax continues formulating breakthrough technologies to help you keep your car looking, feeling, and smelling fresh. Turtle Wax, trusted innovation inside and out.
Brad, what's going on with Win Your Crap?
Win Brad's stuff, you
Win
mean?
Brad's stuff.
Well, last week we told you about that limited edition Hot Wheels of my Chevelle.
Yeah.
And
it was like an oddly large Hot Wheels.
Yeah, it's I don't even know what scale it is.
It's like double size.
It's double size.
It was double stuffed
and
super size.
We actually had some people email me and go, "Hey, I have a Hot Wheels collection, could I win?" That's not how it works. we do them at random. So,
but thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and who knows, you might be the random winner. So the with the enthusiasm for that, I pulled another one out, and this is once again a Hot Wheels. They called them G Machines, and this was if you're familiar with Steve Strope, built a lot of really cool Mopars. He's here in town. He's a buddy of ours, but this is his 1970. Petrol Charger is what he called it. And this had our Bond Speed wheels on it. So it was part of our Bond Speed edition of Hot Wheels. And it's really cool. It's all black, orange stripe. And this was a very cool car in a lot of magazines. And what they do, Matt, is when you license your stuff, they send you a box. It's like to approve everything. And it's a good thing because, like, I know this one is correct, but we had addition. I think we gave away one of the Ford GTs.
Yeah.
And the reason they send you those is to, you know, just make sure there's nothing wrong. And I'm thinking, it's a little late now. Aren't they already on the container coming over? But they had forgot to put our logo on the box. And so, believe it or not, when you see those, there's a sticker on the front of every box that says Bond Speed. They literally had somebody, they had a room of people in there putting stickers on every box. So these are like our pre-check. Even the boxes they come in say,
some kid
sample
in Bangladesh
pre-check.
Put them all on there.
What's that?
Some kid in Bangladesh put them all on there.
Probably, And so anyways, these are our pre-checks. And I'm sure some Hot Wheel collector would love to have the box because it has stamped on it. Pre-production prototype checking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but we're going to give away this one. There'll be a picture of it, as always, on Instagram. And then next week, we'll announce the winners of both these because I never chose the winner of the Chevelle yet, so we'll
those are
it.
Cool. I like those.
So the Fox Body one's really a cool one, but I'm keeping all those.
Yeah, sure you are.
We did an edition of 5 Fox Body G Machines, and they were really cool.
Yeah,
man.
Sure,
but you just, you know, you can't even get to see them because you'll just steal them. Hey, last thing before we leave this week, Sturgis. Every summer, Sturgis Bike Week's coming up, and I saw this little piece of news coming up, and I just thought, Sturgis just keeps getting badder and badder ass over the years. You know, it's where attorneys go to kind of feel like, you know, they're a badass biker. Well, Matt, this year the Cushman Club has announced that they're having official activities, including 8th mile drag races.
Nice. Who the hell the Cushman Club?
Okay. You've seen these Cushman scooters, man. They were built in the 30s. Cushman originally made like golf carts and utility carts that they would run around big factories in. And when the Depression came, they needed to do something to you know, keep going, like a lot of companies. And they came out with these little scooters. And kind of like a Vespa.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they started making ones that were a little trickier, like, you know, looked more like motorcycles and mini. And they got a whole cult status. And like I said, they needed to sell their single-engine motors. So what they did is they built what they called the Eagle, a motorcycle in miniature. And that was in 1949 and kept the scooter company in business until the 60s when Honda and Vespas kind of overtook America, you know, and kind of pushed them out of business. The bastards that came here took our American scooter business. Well, they're coming back because they are going to do drag racing at Buffalo Chip's 8th mile drag strip.
So all the scooter guys are going to drag race?
So if you had, I mean, just put that in your head and think about it. All these scooter guys going to be there with the biker guys, and they'll probably have all their club colors on. Cushman, Chicago.
Yeah.
Cushman, Milwaukee. But
if anybody's listening and has one of these Cushman scooters, let us know.
I want to say one
thing.
Hit us
up. and
this is not the first time that the Cushman Club has come to Sturgis. They came in 2010, and the best quote that I could find about their visit in 2010 was that the chief of police in Sturgis said, "Well, heck, they're invited back anytime. We didn't have to put a single one of them in jail." that was the
That's
quote,
awesome.
Which is awesome. So they're welcome back anytime in Sturgis.
Yeah. So. All right, guys, we're wrapping up. We want to tell you about a new podcast we got going on over at Podcast One. If you like this show, then take a gamble on RJ Bell's Dream Preview each week on Podcast One Sportsnet. Get everything you need on the biggest games each week from pregame.com's Wise Guy Roundtable with the host RJ Bell and some of the biggest names from the world of sports betting. Check out RJ Bell's Dream Preview at Podcast One Sportsnet and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember to rate and review them on iTunes.
Do you think RJ Bell's over there saying, "Hey guys, you should be listening to Shift and Stuff"?
Hell yeah, he is.
Yeah, because he knows that we're good sports bettors. Right. So we know how to work the odds.
Ooh, you want to make a bet whether he's doing it or
not? Let's bet. Yeah, there you go. Let's bet on if he's doing
it. All right, listen to RJ Bell show.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Shift and Steer, and we'll be back next week. And hey, thanks to Turtle Wax, Brush Hero for supporting the show. And you can find us where, Matt?
Check us out at shiftandsteer.com and, of course, the podcast on iTunes or wherever you're listening to podcasts. Give us a nice review and rating. Win some of Brad's stuff.
That's right.
By the way, these cars are cool. These are good ones.
The other ones weren't?
The other ones,
You didn't like the posters.
The Ford GT is good, too.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. You can find me at Motorator. I'm on all the social medias.
And you can find me, Bond Speed Brad, on Instagram, where I do most of my posts. But everywhere else, it's Brad Fanshaw. And Aaron will probably be back next week. And you can find him at Aaron Hagar.
That's true.
Hagar. So, hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shift and Steer.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure, Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.